Stephen Recker. Welcome to Lake Effect. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you. I had a really great time today. I'm pretty impressed with this facility. I didn't really expect to walk up and see such a huge building that said Civil War Museum, much less in this idyllic setting.
It's fairly impressive. Well, let me start by having you explain how you first got started in this collecting of Civil War photography.
Sure. Well, I was a young kid living in Pennsylvania. My mother would drag me around to Civil War sites, but I ended up spending about 20 years as a professional lead guitar player, and then I went on doing high tech in the 90s, and I ended up producing a CD-ROM called Virtual Gettysburg. And about 10 years ago, I decided to move out here and work on Virtual Antietam. And in order to study for that, I try to get as many photographs as I can just so that I understand how people interpret the battle so that I can have an interpretation that sort of carries through how other people have done it. And I started collecting postcards of Antietam because there are very few rare photographs. But then about 5 years ago, I finally ended up buying a really great photograph collection of one of the old families in Sharpsburg. And after that, it just sort of mushroomed, and I started just finding incredible photographs all the time. In fact, a good friend of mine told me that he wouldn't trade my luck for a license to steal because I just have this way of having great photographs attract me.
One of the things that you talked about in your lecture is kind of the photographic legacy of the Civil War and the chronology of how and when people took pictures of the battlefields, particularly Antietam.
It had a lot to do with how the photographs were taken and the history of it, which is fascinating. If you think about it, it's only 1840s that photography comes in at all. And the CDV, the carte de visite, comes in the 1860s, and of course it's the first way to really be able to have little photographs that you can replicate and start to hand out. And so there's some of those, but the stereo camera comes in around the same time. That's really big fad, so you have the stereo images. But then, of course, after the battle, which are more the photographs that I'm interested in, George Eastman invents film photography, and the Brownie camera and the first Kodak camera comes around in the mid-1880s, and of course, that's when the veterans start coming back. So in the mid-1880s, all of a sudden, there's this huge rush of photographs of battlefields. And when you realize that that's because all of a sudden, when the veterans come back, you know, the veteran's brother can come with a little Brownie camera, and then it all of a sudden makes sense why in the mid-1880s there's this huge rush of photographs. You know, with the dry film that comes in the late 1880s and the 1890s and the different processes, you know, the history of post-war photography really does, you know, just follow all the advancements that came around.
So in most of these cases, these were veterans coming back, kind of marking where they had fought, where maybe their fellow soldiers had fallen. But you kind of made a joke in your lecture about how you take one picture of a battlefield, it's really easy to forget where exactly you were and what exactly you were looking at. So then why are these photographs so important?
Well, I think that for me, what really interests me as a battlefield guide is that I want to show people what happened. And it's usually tied to the terrain. You know, there's a hill, there's a lake, there's a creek, there's a bunch of trees. All of this stuff usually happens because of some geographic feature. And if you don't understand what the battlefield looked like at the time, it's kind of hard to figure out what happened because maybe something has changed. Well, at Antietam, not a lot has changed, but enough has changed that it can be confusing to understand how the battle happened if you don't really have a sense of what it was like at the time. Well, what's great about these photographs afterwards is that not only do we have the photographic evidence of this woodlot here was here and it was bigger, but you have letters that the veterans sent with the photographs. So they can say, this is a picture I took in 1889, but the axe fiend has been here. Like this woodlot, that's what they call the woodcutters that came in when the Industrial Revolution happens in the 1890s, start cutting down the trees. Well, they'll take a picture and they'll say, there was a woodlot here, but they cut away all the trees and this road wasn't here and they added this fence. And so not only were they aware of how important it was to take a picture, but they gave us the favor of telling us all the different things in the pictures that were different at the time of the battle.
And so then how does this help you to bring alive, when you're taking people to the field as a guide, how did the photographs bring it alive for the people who are going to experience Antietam maybe for the first time?
Sure. One of the fun things that I found recently was a witness stump. I mean, it was a tree that's in a very beloved photograph. A friend of mine, Nick Pisernos, the historian of the 10th Maine, and he's got a picture of the 1889 reunion of the 10th Maine, and there's this huge tree right in the middle. Well, I went to try to find that location, and there was just a tree stump. Now, unfortunately, just about 5 years ago, the local electric company just chopped that down for no reason. And it breaks your heart, but at least there's this huge stump sitting there, and you might drive past it a million times and not think about it. But if you can walk to that spot and pull out a picture of the veteran standing around that, you'd be amazed at what an electric feeling it is to say, wow, you know, even though the tree's gone, that this tree is there and the road still goes around it because the tree's been there for 150 plus years. And if you key in on features like that that I never would have thought of if I hadn't seen that picture. But now I've got pictures of that tree from a bunch of different angles, and I can see when it was there was a fence there and when they did this and that, and that really connects you back to the veterans.
Tell me the story of the photos you found with the Rocky Ledge and the story of the Iron Brigade there.
Oh, the Rocky Ledge, yes. The New Jersey Historic Society had Ezra Carman's papers, and his son dropped all his papers and his photographs there in about, I think, around 1929. Well, the photographs weren't really well marked, and one day, a couple of years ago, I decided I wanted to take a day off, and so I jumped in my car and I shot over there to see what on their website they had listed one photograph, and I went to see that one photograph, and I found it, and it wasn't that interesting, but I ended up finding hidden in their closets just over 100 really amazing photographs. And one of the most important sets was taken by, well, for Ezra Carman. He was the historian of the battlefield. In 1895, the War Department comes in. They put in the avenues, they put in the fences, and they put in the War Department markers. And after he was done, he had a local photographer take photographs of the whole battlefield. And one of the most important sets, you know, and not so much the battlefield, but the battlefield board's work, all the new avenues and the markers. But one of the most important features there is a rocky ledge that parallels the Hagerstown Pike. And early in the morning, some about 80 skirmishers from the Stonewall Jackson Division had taken a position along this rocky ledge because it was down the hill and it was hidden from the Hagerstown Pike. But they anticipated that Joseph Hooker's 1st Corps would be coming south down that road and they would be in a perfect position to shoot into their flank. Well, the Iron Brigade comes out of the north and they ended up coming through the woods and they go down David Miller's driveway, and two of the regiments, the 7th Wisconsin and the 19th Indiana, crosses the Hagerstown Pike, goes behind Miller's barn, and pushes the Confederates off of this rocky ledge. And so now these two regiments of the Iron Brigade have this possession of the rocky ledge paralleling the Hagerstown Pike. Well, on the other side of the road, you have the 2nd and the 6th Wisconsin. They're pushing right through the cornfield. And, of course, you have Battery B, the 4th U.S., going right down the Hagerstown Pike. So they're straddling the pike. They've got two regiments on one side, two on the other, and the Battery B right on the Hagerstown Pike. Well, the Stonewall Jackson Division then comes from the south, from the Westwoods, and they go right up against the Hagerstown Pike fence because they see the Iron Brigade on the other end, other side of the road where the cornfield is. So those two regiments from the cornfield come up against the other side of the pike, and now you've got the Stonewall Jackson Division and the Iron Brigade firing across the street from each other right over the Hagerstown Pike. Well, unbeknownst to the Stonewall Jackson Division, these two regiments of the Iron Brigade that are along the rocky ledge now swing around and come right into the rear of them and pin them down along the fence. Well, what's worse for them now is you got Battery B coming right down the pike into their flank. So they've got nowhere to go. They can't go to the fence in front of them. They can't go to the rear because the Iron Brigade's holding them in. And now they're getting double shots of canister going right into their flank. And that's how you get the dead along the Hagerstown Pike. So those pictures that Alexander Gardner took 2 days later, when you wonder why he took pictures at this one spot, it's because the Louisiana Tigers were boxed in along the Hagerstown Pike by the Iron Brigade.
You know, there's that expression, a picture is worth a thousand words. But in these pictures, I feel like you really do need to have the context. And listening to the story that you've just told and having seen the pictures earlier, it really brings it alive. How important then, you know, what kind of significance can we put on these photos just by themselves? I mean, how much do we really have to invest the time to know the history?
Well, I think the important thing for me is that the veterans took these pictures. And when you go to the battlefield, that's what I like about the War Department tablets. They were written by the veterans. And that's why I'm very much for the old monuments, and I'm not really into new monuments because they're put up by people that weren't there. And I'd rather have the battlefield be a record of what happened written by the people that were there. And so when I see pictures taken by William B. King, who took the pictures for Ezra Carman. Well, Ezra Carman not only was there with the 13th New Jersey, but he wrote the history. He was the historian of the battlefield, and he hires William B. King, whose father was in the Purnell Legion. He was at the battle. So when they're going around the battlefield taking pictures, they know what to take pictures of. You know, when you might look at the rocky ledge, in fact, there was an early picture of the rocky ledge that was in a guidebook in 1906 put out by someone who wasn't a veteran. Well, he took that picture out because it's just this big open field and this little strip of rock. You look at it and you think a tourist might not be that interested. But if you were in the Battle of Antietam, you know that that rocky ledge tells this amazing story of the Iron Brigade and the Stonewall Jackson Division and all this important stuff. And so if you look at a picture that a veteran took, you might first say, well, what's important about this? It's just a rocky ledge. But if you then think, okay, I'm going to try to figure out why they bothered to take a picture of this very nondescript land feature. And then you start to read about it, and then all of a sudden you go, wow, you know, it's not for me to judge that it's a boring picture. It's for me to find out what the veteran was trying to tell us years later. In fact, so many of the pictures that I have are of features on the battlefield that people don't really pay attention to now. And I think that that's one of the things I'm trying to do with my new book, Rare Images of Antietam, is to try to tune people into what the veterans thought was important on the battlefield.
Well, Stephen Recker, thank you so much.
Great. Thank you very much.